Up first in the 5 o'clock hour this afternoon, we welcome back to the program professor, political scientist, author. She's the editor of a brand new book called More Than Blue, More Than Yankee, Complexity and Change in New England Politics. Happy to be joined by Amy Fried. Amy, good to have you back here with us. Welcome.
Yeah, it's super to be here.
Everybody, I think, sort of feeling the same way, regardless of what side they're on, a bit uneasy about what might happen over the course of the next, well, I'd say 24 hours, but maybe more like 72 hours.
Yeah, it will take time to count all the votes, although, you know, there's surprises possible in terms of early calls, too. We just really don't know. The polls tend to be really, really close. We don't know where the polling error might be because there's likely to be a polling error. But frankly, I'm sort of looking at things beyond polling. Mm. And one of the things that has really struck me is what seems like an enthusiasm gap. Now, it's hard to say how meaningful that is or how real it is. But if you look at donations, Kamala Harris has done much, much better with many more donors, many small donors. Tremendous amount of volunteers, just an incredible number of volunteers. The rallies have been incredibly energetic, while recent rallies for Trump have been poorly attended and, you know, not very energetic. And then, you know, if we are going to include polling, the polling about who is more enthusiastic, it seems like there is more enthusiasm even in the polls for Kamala Harris. Then again, you know, as I said, who knows?
Well, when you mention the volunteers, that makes me think about the ground game, the get out the vote effort. And I felt for a long time that this election hinges on turnout. And that may be an area where Harris has an edge with all those volunteers helping get people to the polls tomorrow and in the days and weeks leading up to tomorrow.
Absolutely. I mean, there's actually quite a lot of political science research on this and field work. Knocking on doors, all that kind of get out the vote work can make a difference. Now, it doesn't make a huge difference if someone's ahead by 5 points. You're not going to win because you have a good ground game, but it can be at least half a percentage point, maybe 1.5 or even a little bit more. And there's just no doubt that the Harris campaign has a ton of volunteers. They're very well organized and they're really very much out there. And some of that is also the result of decisions made by the Trump campaign not to put a lot of energy and then to outsource some of that. So you have Elon Musk, for example, paying for field work in Michigan and Pennsylvania. And he, you know, it actually is something that takes some expertise.
Right.
And doesn't seem like there are that many people. Also, if you pay people to do all of your door knocking, they are just not as effective. I was thinking about a couple years ago, I don't remember exactly when there were some ballot initiatives that people had where they were paying people. And it turned out that a lot of the signatures were bogus because people were just going out there to get the money. They didn't really care. While you have, when you have those sorts of activities, and people are really volunteering and they have the passion, they're just much more effective.
Well, we'll talk more about the presidential race in a moment, but I want to look here in the state of Maine and particularly here in Congressional District 2, what it certainly seems to be a pretty tight race between the incumbent Jared Golden and Austin Terrio making his first run at the larger stage here. It's been a campaign where, again, a lot of out-of-state money, a lot of super PAC money has come in. We've seen the barrage of commercials. But essentially, what do you see as the difference between the two when it comes to who will vote for them?
Well, you know, Jared Golden has really managed to outperform Democratic candidates in the 2nd District. And he, you know, he has a track record. He's been an incumbent for a while. There's definitely an incumbency advantage if you look across House races. That certainly tends to happen. But, you know, if Trump does end up doing very well in the 2nd District, it probably would be harder. It would be harder for him to win. I mean, not if Trump wins, because he's won before when Trump won. But if Trump really did end up doing very well in the 2nd District. But we know Maine voters, they split their tickets. Mm. You know, you could go back 4 years ago. I remember driving by houses that would have on, you know, on their lawns, not the signs out on the, you know, on the roadway, but on their lawns, they'd have Susan Collins, and then they'd have Donald Trump, and then they'd have Jared Golden. So, like, you know, we see that. And then, of course, the statewide where, you know, Collins won while Biden carried the state. So, you know, it is certainly possible that Golden could get reelected, and the latest polls look pretty good for him.
He's benefited in the past from ranked choice voting, but it doesn't seem that's going to be a factor this time around.
No, no. I mean, it's just, you know, really not anybody else there. So it's a two-way race.
Yeah. I wonder, are there people that just leave that second choice blank rather than take the other guy?
I think that's possible, you know, perhaps on both sides, although certainly, you know, based on what I've been hearing from people, there are some people who are Democrats who are very unhappy with some of the things that he said. They didn't really care that Representative Golden said they thought Trump would win, but they were bothered when he said that he wouldn't be a threat to democracy. And then there are some other votes and issue positions that have gotten them rather upset. On the other hand, I've also heard a lot of people say, well, they're still going to vote for him. Ultimately, you know, people who were questioning whether they would from the Democratic point of view, because they think it's important to win that House seat.
We're talking with Amy Fried here on Downtown. Well, as we watch the election returns tomorrow night, and I've gone back and forth, and I can't watch. I'm not going to watch. But then I realize I'm hooked. I've been watching since I was 10 years old. I will be there, probably stay up late tomorrow night. Are there some early trends? Will there be some signs that might tell us early in the evening which way this thing might go?
Well, if Harris seems to be doing particularly well in some of the East Coast states that don't take as long to report, like North Carolina, Georgia can take some time. But, you know, even in places like that, the people will be looking at where the returns are coming from and how they look. So if she's doing particularly well in some of the swing areas, swing precincts, swing congressional districts, that will really, you know, start to tell. And especially, and also, of course, if Trump is doing well there. But we've seen really since Dobbs in particular, since Roe was overturned, a lot of suburban areas around some of the big cities really moving much more Democratic. And some of it is certainly suburban women, but even suburban men who live in those areas have been voting more Democratic. And abortion is most certainly a big issue. It's not the only issue, plenty of other issues, but that's one that has really had an impact. So if they look at the areas and then compare what those votes are looking like to previous elections, you really may start to get a sense of overperformance by one candidate or the other. I mean, you know, Trump has never won the popular vote nationwide, but, you know, he certainly has some states that he's won either, at least once that are up this time as swing states. So people will be looking at, you know, those key areas.
When we look at the early voting, normally we would think that would benefit Harris. And I think overall, that's certainly the case. But one difference between now and 4 years ago is that back in 2020, Trump was discouraging his voters from participating in early voting. So we're likely to see it at least be a little bit closer this time around, that there will be some Trump people who vote early.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And we can already see in some of the early vote returns in some of the states that there's a fair number of Republicans who have already cast their ballots. You know, also in 2020, we were right in the middle of the pandemic, and Democrats were, you know, in some ways taking that more seriously, you could say, you know, more likely to get vaccines, more likely to wear masks. And so they were less likely to want to go out in public and cast a ballot. And so there was really a, you know, very large number of Democrats that were voting early. So I think, yeah, percentage wise, it's not going to be the case that you will have as big a discrepancy.
Again, you take all the polls with a grain of salt, but you and I were talking about this before we came on. There does seem to be, in countless polls, a huge gender gap, and it's not just among young women, but I'm a little bit surprisingly, even with women over 65.
Absolutely. And, you know, historically, there's been a gender gap for many years. It started in 1980, which is when Republicans took support for the Equal Rights Amendment out of their platform. And that wasn't really even that long after Roe v. Wade. They were becoming more socially conservative. But yeah, this year it looks like quite a significant gender gap. I think with older women, they look back and they see all the years that there was abortion rights. And as I was saying to a friend of mine, who's, you know, falls in this category, a little older than me, in fact, I said, you know, some of us know people who had illegal abortions. I mean, I worked with someone once when I was volunteering someplace, and the woman was older than I am, who had had an illegal abortion. And she said, yes, she did too. She also knew people from growing up. So like, if you're from a certain age, you remember the time before Roe, or at least indirectly through somebody else, you really might know someone who had an illegal abortion before Roe. So you know that what that situation was, and then you've had about, you know, 50 years of reproductive rights, and now we're seeing what happens when it went away. I mean, one of the things that really strikes me about the abortion debate right now is that we're talking about it in a little different way than we were maybe 5 years ago, because I think the biggest emphasis is on really the threats to women's health and women's fertility in states where there's really severe, extreme abortion bans, where there are some women who are literally dying because they're not getting treated. And I don't think we really talked about abortion that way before, as really a part of that whole reproductive health of a woman being pregnant and needing care. And I think that is really, you know, drawn in a lot of voters who are very concerned about what that might mean, not only for themselves, but for their children, perhaps even grandchildren.
Well, we know because he's been pretty upfront about it and has dropped lots of hints as well. But if it doesn't go well, I think even early tomorrow night, do you think that we'll see Trump do what he essentially did 4 years ago and claim victory before the results are even in? And we know that if he doesn't do well, he'll challenge elections in several states. Are states better prepared to handle these challenges than they were in 2020?
I think quite a lot of states are. I think some of them have changed some of their processes and some of their laws. And there's been this year some pre-election lawsuits. So when in Georgia, there was the Georgia Election Board that passed certain things that would make it easier to hold off the count or hold, you know, just make it harder to certify the election, they've already been told by the courts that they can't do that. So, and there is absolutely no doubt for what you first brought up here, which is that, of course, Trump will come out and say he won. He always says he wins. And, you know, we know from some of the filings from Jack Smith, the special counsel, that he planned to do that in 2020, he was always going to come out and say that he won no matter what happened.
Well, and I said yesterday, claiming that the polls are off, that he's going to win by a landslide. And if we don't, well, it was stolen. So, yeah. And I think, you know, that in and of itself is what makes this additionally important tomorrow. It's not just about who wins. It's about that we, I think, show that our electoral system can still work and that we've got safeguards in place, that there is not massive voter fraud. There's no evidence of that. And whatever happens, I guess I'm hopeful that it's decisive enough that any complaints about it will seem like, well, what they are.
Yeah, I think we really could all hope for that because, I have my next column in the Bangor Daily News. I talk about the 2000 election, right? So that ended up getting decided by a recount, less than 500 votes in great big state of Florida. The Supreme Court ultimately was the decision maker because they stopped a statewide count. You know, we don't need to go into the details of all of that. I think if something like that ended up happening again, it would really be treated differently now, because in 2000 there was much higher trust in the Supreme Court than there is now.
Right.
You know, so I think that's something that should be avoided if we want to have really a modicum of trust in our institutions. But you know, I think really looking back on 2020, the courts came through in terms of really taking what they had to do seriously, going through normal processes of election law and litigating all these cases, and ultimately, making the decision. Now, of course, a lot of people still do not accept that. About 60% of Republicans still believe that the election was stolen. But most of the American public thinks that what happened was legitimate.
Amy Fried with us here on Downtown. Amy, we thank you so much for coming in and sharing your insight. I would say enjoy tomorrow, but even for political junkies, I'm not sure enjoy is the word, but we'll be watching closely to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, and thanks for having me here.
Amy Fried with us here on Downtown. It is 20 minutes after the hour. We'll take a quick break. Alan Adams coming up next. We'll talk movies. Pass the popcorn right after this.
Hi, this is Jeff Daniels. You're listening to Downtown with Rich Kimball.